Welcome to Process Breakdown, where we get proven and successful entrepreneurs to reveal step by step what's currently working behind the scenes in their businesses. Sit back, relax, and take notes as you discover how today's guest has been able to systematize their entire business so that it runs successfully without their constant involvement, like a well-oiled machine on overdrive. And here is your host.
Hi, my name is Owen McGabinowo, and welcome to episode 83 of the Process Breakdown podcast. Do you want to discover how to create a vision for your business? In this interview, my guest reveals how he created a vision for his ideal business and achieved freedom through systemization. You will discover how he was able to build a business that supports the life he wants to live and gives him the freedom to travel when he wants to and work when he wants to work. Enjoy the interview. My guest today is Darren Root, and he is the CEO of RootWorks LLC. Darren, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Owen. It's great to be here and looking forward to a good discussion today.
Awesome. So this interview is all about us going out there to get into entrepreneurs like yourself who have been able to systematize your business so that it runs successfully without you and get you to share how you actually did that for our audience, the listener who's listening today. So before we talk about, how you systematize your business, let's talk about, what are some mind-blowing results that you currently now experience as a result of going through the process of systematizing and automating your business?
Well, I think the big one, Owen, is freedom. So, I have the ability to sort of have a business that supports the life that I want to live, which gives me really the freedom to travel, to work from wherever I want to work, when I want to work, and not sacrifice. You know, oftentimes when you're working and everything depends on you, and you're not working, then all of a sudden, the money goes away. What's really nice is when you systematize a business and it gives you this freedom and the money's still coming in, that's probably the best results.
That word freedom is huge. I mean, it's nothing to sneeze at. It's a huge thing. Everybody is looking for that, and I'm glad you have that. So how has your company itself been transformed as a result of systematizing the business?
Well, I think the big thing is that my team, when I first started systematizing, we probably had 8 staff people. Now we have 32. Wow. And I think the big transformations there from the systematizing, it's really hard to run a company of 32 employees if you don't have a series of systems and processes in place. But it also gives my employees the fact that we systematized our business. It gives my team the confidence to run the day-to-day operations without feeling this need to sort of tug on my pant leg all the time, if that makes sense.
I totally understand. You already mentioned you have freedom, but I was trying to look from your personal life. During the interview, you say you travel a lot now. Talk about that.
I do. My wife, you enter different phases of your life, right?
And
I'm at the point I'm an empty nester. So my wife and I have been married for 32 years, and I do a lot of speaking gigs around the country, but also around the world a bit now. Mm-hmm. And having the freedom to pick up, and so an example is I was doing a speaking gig in London in mid-April.
Yeah.
So a couple of places in London. So we decided to stay over there for 3 weeks and hit Paris and hit a few other great spots. So it's that freedom. To one, not have the kids at home anymore, but the freedom just to kind of pick up and go and enjoy places that I'm also happen to be working in as well.
That's awesome. And just so the listener have some context as to what your business is all about. So what exactly does your company do, and what big pain or problem do you solve for your customers?
That's a great question. I'll start with what we do. I started out owning a traditional CPA firm, Owen, and that has evolved as a result of systematizing and creating this vision for our accounting firm, we got really good at running an accounting firm, or I got good at running an accounting firm. And what I found was I could leverage that to other accounting firms across the country. And so what our business really does today is we help CPA firms across North America, UK, France, South America. We help them figure out how to to run the business that we figured out how to run.
I like that. So what I'm hearing from that, sorry to cut you short, is that first of all, you run a CPA firm where you do the traditional CPA firm where you're helping your customers, and with their, understand their finances and all that. But because you've systematized your CPA firm, you are now able to take the learnings on that to help other CPA firms themselves to kind of build systematized CPA firms. Is that what you're saying?
It is. And so, I've written a few books about the process, as well as I do a lot of public speaking. And, sometimes when you have a business that although you systematized it, if you build a business that really depends on you solely, it keeps you tied to a location. When you can create a business that doesn't depend on you and you have these systems and processes, it gives you this freedom to travel. And that's what I really enjoy doing now is teaching other people how to do this.
This is awesome. So is your company profitable? What was last year's annual revenue and what you probably expect to generate this year?
Our company is really profitable. I think this past year we did about $6 million.
Awesome.
And we'll be between 8 and 9 million this year. And our goal is always to put about 40% to the bottom line.
Congratulations. That's great news. And so, we've talked about kind of like, the results you now experience as a result of your business being systematized, but it wasn't always like this. So take us back to when the business was not systematized and automated like it is now. What was wrong with it at that time?
I started my career, Owen, after I got out of Indiana University as a CPA, and I went to work for Deloitte, what was Deloitte Haskins and Sells back in the bit. Today, yeah. They just call it Deloitte, right? From there, I went off, like most young CPAs, they cut their teeth in a big four firm, yeah. And they go off on their own. And the biggest challenge I had was, I went off on my own. I really didn't have any clients, and so I started trying to build my business based on the skill set I had. I was a tax guy.
Yeah.
And so I started building this business. But, my goal in building the business was to get everybody to rely on me because I thought that was the thing to do.
Yeah.
And then, I'm married. I've got this business that's growing, but I've built it around my particular skill set. And, I'm really not systematizing anything. I'm just working a little bit harder as we grow.
Yeah.
So it becomes all about me. And then you have kids, and they have activities as they grow. I mean, you know, probably the story. And you wake up one day and you're running around like crazy, trying to keep up with work, kids, family life, everything that's going on. And you kind of hit a wall. I mean, I see this a lot with professionals that we deal with.
Yeah, and you mentioned during the pre-interview that kind of your life was basically your schedule was being controlled by your clients at that point. And I want to because someone listening to that, we don't want to just dive away from that. I want to describe how bad it got. So talk about some of the lowest points back then when the business was not systematized and how bad it got. I think you mentioned something about the tax season and how that played a role.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in the tax and accounting business, you have these deadlines. That loom every year, whether it's tax season, but there's always deadlines in the tax and accounting business. And, probably the lowest point I can remember was, one busy season, weather was horrible. I live in southern Indiana, so, big snowstorms that we were having. And, I'm having to get up at 3 a.m. to get to the office to get work done because starting at 8:00, I had clients that wanted to see me all day. And so you're not getting any work done during the day. And then the evening, you're going back and getting work done or you're running to kids' activities. And, you get up the next day, it's like Groundhog Day. The next day is
the same exact thing. Yeah.
Right. And you do that right up until April 15th. And
for months.
Yeah, you do it for months. And when you do anything for months, your life changes. And then you have to go through this cycle of trying to change it back, only to start all over again the next year. So that was not a high point.
Yeah, I totally understand. And you mentioned how at that point, too, you came across eMyth. That kind of set you in the trajectory of, changing things around. Talk about that.
I did. I've always been a reader, an avid reader, and a self-help kind of guy. And so, when I'm in this sort of state of, I'm working like crazy, I go to Barnes & Noble, and this is back when you actually went into a bookstore, right?
Yeah.
And looking for some books. And, you know, I run across this book called The E-Myth, and really didn't make a lot of sense to me as to what E-Myth stood for, right? And
bad title, but great book.
So I pick it up, and I devour it over a week, and I'm like, holy cow, Michael Gerber is speaking to me. I haven't created a business at all. I created a job for myself, and everything depends on me, and I don't have any systems and processes, and I'm not running a company. I have a job. I'm a technician. And it just really spoke to me, and that really woke me up, Owen.
Yeah, and before we even talk about what you even did when you had this inspiration and you're working on by reading that book, I really want to talk to some of the emotional points, because you mentioned during the pre-interview of how your wife was always pissed at you back then and how your kids were actually saying that you lived at the office. How did that feel, though?
Well, you know, my wife and I have been together since she was 14 and I was 16. And, you know, here I am. You know, I've left a big firm and I'm trying to build this company, but, you know, she's at home with three small children, and, you know, you're being pulled in both directions. And so, you know, it just gets to a point where, you know, she's probably had enough. You know, her day is stressful with raising young kids. She wasn't working at the time, but, you know, I wasn't home very much. Like I said, I was coming into the office sometimes at 3 a.m. and working late in the evenings. And, she wasn't happy about it. So it really hit me one day when, you know, at that point, my oldest son at the time, who wasn't all that old, somebody asked where he lived, and he said, well, my daddy lives at the office.
Wow.
You know, that kind of hits you between the eyes, right? And you start thinking, I've got to figure something out here.
I totally understand. And so, you know, having that epiphany, you know, what would you say was the very first step you now took to systematize the business? I think during the pre-interview, just to make sure that you kind of elaborate on this point, is that you said that you had to figure out what exactly you were selling.
Yeah. You know, when you go into business sometimes as a professional, your goal is just to get clients.
Yeah.
And whatever comes in the door feels like a good client at that point. Whether you really have a skill set in that area or not, you kind of take it on and you figure it out later. Well, I mean, as you well know, that's a recipe for disaster at some point. So what I realized was, you know, in sort of those toughest moments was, you know, I had this business that depended upon me, but I was doing a little bit of everything just to keep the doors open. So really the very first step, you know, one of the things I had really figured out from the E-Myth was I had to figure out what business I was in. What was I really selling here? But I couldn't just sell everything. I had to really to define what it is that I needed to sell.
And let's make this concrete for the listener, because I really get that point. But I guess before then, before making this observation that you had to figure out what exactly you were selling, basically, I'm assuming that you were just selling general tax and accounting service, or even bookkeeping, or I want to make the distinction of what you were doing then, and when you figured out what you were selling, what it now became.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, it seems simple. I sell accounting and tax services, but taxes can be fairly broad, right? I mean, whether you do nonprofits, do you do partnerships, do you do corps, do you do individuals, do you do international, you know, there's all kinds of tax. So I can't just say that I do, you don't want to just say that you do tax. I mean, today we do individual tax for U.S.-based citizens. We do S-Corps for service-based companies, and we do partnerships for service-based businesses. That's it. So we probably cut out 80% of the things we were doing as it related to tax.
Yeah.
You know, you could, on the accounting side, you could say, I do work for manufacturers. I do work for production. I do work for retail. I do work for service-based businesses. Again, that's a really broad spectrum of expertise that you have to have. And today, you know, what we do is we do accounting related services, payroll, bookkeeping, financial statements for service-based businesses only.
Yeah.
So we really narrowed that focus tremendously. And to be honest, you know, we probably got rid of, Owen, I would say 80% of the kind of services we were selling.
Just to focus on what you had to be doing. And I think you also made this analogy during the pre-interview of how Jobs, when he came back to Apple, talk about that, what he did.
You know, I don't know if you read the book by Walter Isaacson, but, you know, he talks in the book about Steve Jobs, that when Jobs came back, you know, to take back control of Apple.
Yeah.
What he had, what he had, one of the first things he did is he looked at the vast product line that had been created, because Scully, the CEO, you know, that was there when Jobs came back.
Yeah.
His concept was, you know, in order to drive more revenue, I needed more products.
More SKUs and everything, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, if you think back, you know, Apple back then was, you know, you had Apple Talk was their network software. They had, you know, they had Apple servers. I mean, the spectrum was big. And what one of the first things that Jobs did was he said, I need to go through every single product and figure out, can we be the best in the world at selling these, and what should we be selling? And you'll, if you think back now, I mean, that product line went from something that was fairly broad. I mean, they were producing printers and, like I said, all kinds of things, to something very narrow they were going to sell.
It was literally one product at one point.
Yeah. I mean, they got really down to that iMac, right?
Yeah.
And then from there, you know, came the, you know, their, the video or the audio device before the iPhone came out.
Yeah, I totally get that point. And so you said the next step back then you took to systematize the business. What was it? You said that after, I'm just reiterating what you said during the pre-interviews, after you figured out what to sell, I think the next thing was how to deliver it.
Yeah, you know, again, so let's say that I was... I decided I wanted to offer payroll services. This is probably an easy example. I'm going to offer payroll services to service-based businesses. Okay, that's that's fairly narrow, right?
Yeah.
But really what I had to do is I had to figure out, okay, if I'm going to offer payroll services to a service-based business, what technology, how am I going to deliver this? How am I going to teach my staff to do this? What's my model going to look like? Am I going to gather... Am I going to gather hours digitally up front? Am I going to use direct deposit? Are we going to put paycheck stubs in portals so that clients and employees can see those? Or am I just going to not have a model where, you know, the client could give me us hours in any way they wanted to? And some employees would want paychecks printed. Some would want in a portal. Some would want them in a different way. You know, it's just all these different variables. What we did is we said, okay, if we're going to offer payroll services to service-based businesses, here's the way we're going to offer those. Here's the technology we're going to use. And we're only going to take on clients that fit our model.
And are willing to go with the process of just how you deliver. You also mentioned that you also had that issue of, you know, pre-existing clients, how to fit them into this new system that you're rolling out on how to deliver the product. Talk about that.
I mean, the biggest, if you were starting a new business from scratch, it would have been a lot easier because now I know what product I'm going to sell.
Yeah.
I know how I'm going to sell it, and I know how I'm going to deliver it. So every client that comes in
can
match up, right? But the problem with most people is that epiphany hits sometime after they have clients, right?
Yeah.
And so the challenge, one of the biggest challenges I had was, okay, I figured out this new system, this new type of client. What am I going to do with this big mess that I have over here that is my client base? How am I going to take them from where they are to where I want them to be? Does that make sense?
It makes sense. And we're going to talk about this very challenge in not too long from now and how you solved it. I mean, this same thing also had to do with employees too, who now that you have this new model, having them, how would they fit into this new model? So we'll talk about that in a couple of questions down. But what other steps did you take back then to even systematize the business?
Well, once I figured out, you know, what we wanted to sell, once I had built the system, you know, that I wanted to deliver this in, you know, the next big step really was getting my employees on board. And like you mentioned, and we can talk about this a bit more later, but, you know, some employees decided they wanted to fit in that system and some employees not so much so, right? So I'm building this system, I'm training my employees, because the last thing I wanted to do was be the only guy again who was going to go out and convert all my existing clients into this new system.
Yeah.
I needed my team to get on board with this system so they could convert my clients into the new model.
I totally understand. And so when you were actually trying to, you know, first of all, know the product you're selling. Second thing is now how do you deliver this product itself, and then getting your employees on board and even getting your pre-existing customers on board to fit the new model. I'm wondering, you know, when you were creating these systems, how did you even back then prioritize what orders of steps to take? You know, how did you decide, okay, which systems to create processes for and which ones to create processes next?
You know, that's a great question. You know, what I did is I looked at what the process was for every service that we were going to deliver. So from when the prospect first contacted our office, what did I want that experience to be like, to what technology was I going to use to serve them, to what was the product going to be like on the back end. So I think your question is, how did I prioritize
where to focus your attention?
Where to go first? Mm-hmm. And you know, what I really wanted to do was look at the client facing components.
Okay,
because these are the things the clients were going to see from me. I had to really clean up our image to match this new model that I was creating. So I wanted my front end system.
Sorry to cut you short, but that's funny because it's like you're making sure the customer gets this well packaged experience, whereas behind the scene it could be chaos.
You know, it's probably the case in a lot of situations, but you know, you have to figure out. I mean, do I build the back end
first,
or do I clean up the front end? And I don't know that I have an opinion which one's right, Owen.
Yeah,
because both of them have to be done.
Yeah.
You know, it's I took this. I used to be in this coaching group a number of years ago, and the guy that led the group talked about this concept of front stage, backstage.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's how this was a concept that really made sense to me, and that, you know, he really related this to the concept of a Broadway play. You know, the actual play itself is front stage. That's what all the customers see.
Yeah.
And that has to be spot on, right?
The show must go on.
Yeah, but if the backstage is not a well-oiled machine, that front stage is not going to work very well.
Yeah.
So it's not like you can say, well, I'm going to look really good, but my back end's going to be a mess. They both have to happen.
Yeah. So I guess the priority is like, you know, front stage, but also making sure that you also are greasing the wheel on the backstage so that the front stage don't fall off. I think you also mentioned something that stood out to me during the interview. You said that another way of, you know, figuring out what to focus on was the most, you know, the most painful aspects of the business. You know, where were you experiencing pain?
I still deal with that today, Owen, is whenever we look at a system or process, we look at solving for pain points. Okay, so if, you know, back in when I was first putting systems and processes in place, you're exactly right. I mean, we looked at, you know, where were we experiencing the greatest deal of pain?
Yeah.
And an example would be, you know, an awful lot of small businesses out there use a product called QuickBooks, right?
Yeah.
And QuickBooks, you know, for years and years and years, and even to today, you know, was a CD-based
software
computer program,
yeah,
right? Mm-hmm. That you'd put on a machine. So as an accountant, you know, I have this client that's not very good, as an example, running QuickBooks, but that whole system lived on their machine.
Their own PC. Machine, yeah.
And the greatest pain point for us as a firm was getting access to that data. You know, in the old days, people would make backups and they'd bring them into the accounting firms, and the accounting firms would massage that data, and then they had to get data back to that. So there was no
friction in the whole,
right?
The whole thing.
Always,
yeah.
Friction. Good point. So so probably always the greatest pain point for us was anytime we were not able to collaborate with a client in real time.
Yeah.
That caused friction for us, whether that was delivering a tax return on the back end or getting a QuickBooks file on the front end. Probably the very first pain point I solved for was removing the friction that was taking place in dealing with customers.
Yeah. And you also mentioned something that you also did was that you had an offsite 1-week retreat with your team. How did that help from the standpoint of trying to systematize the business?
We do that every year, Owen. I take our entire team now, which is certainly getting more expensive, but you know, we get a lot out of it. You know, I take 32 people to an offsite, and we do a whole week. And what we do for that entire week, even today, is we look at what are the pain points in the organization, and then we solve for those. Okay. So we're sort of making sure that back end and the front end is well oiled
Yeah.
before we go out and create lots of new stuff. So we're constantly working on our business. This is not one of those things that you set it and forget it. There's constantly new technologies. There's new ways of doing things.
Yeah.
Just things happen, and you have to constantly be massaging that.
And back then, how exactly did you document procedures and processes for your business? You know, what tools did you even use back then when you were trying to?
Probably in the old days, it was Word, right? Today you have things like OneNote or Evernote and things like that. Today we use OneNote. That we share among our team. So we have all of our processes and procedures well documented in OneNote.
Awesome. And so, my listeners always like to know, maybe like books or mentors that help with you during that stage of when you were. So I guess let me ask a question like this. So at the time when you were actually, working on systematizing and automating business, as we've been talking about, what books or mentors even had the most influence on you? And why? I think earlier you mentioned E-Myth, but you also mentioned some other books too.
Sure. So I would always say that the two books that had the biggest impact on my business life were the E-Myth, but also the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And I actually ended up being a facilitator for the Covey Group back when Stephen was still alive. I got to know him, and I became a facilitator of the 7 Habits because, it's one thing to read the E-Myth, which really tells you, hey, I'm a technician. I need to be a business owner. I need to systematize. I need to understand my products.
Yeah.
But there's a whole other side of your brain that says that, that you actually can make this choice.
Yeah.
You actually can make a decision that you're going to be proactive, that you're going to begin with the end in mind. What kind of business did I really want to have? Did I want to have one that controlled my life, that made my wife unhappy with me and my kids think that I lived at the office? Or did I want a different one? So I wanted to begin with the end in mind. And then, the next step of that is putting first things first. So, just I learned so much from Covey and from Gerber both. In those two books.
Yeah, I'm assuming that 7 Habits book was more like understanding the mind game and the tricks your mind plays with you on you, right? That's kind of what it was. Yeah. And so so we spoke earlier about some of the challenges, and I said let's wait until this point to actually talk about how you even solved them. So one of the challenges you mentioned earlier was you said that you're changing the product, what you sell, and then you also changed how you deliver the product. But one of the challenges was okay, now getting employees on board. So let's talk about how you solved that problem, that challenge.
Well, Back when everything really depended upon me, my normal work day was, go to the office, shut my door and get my stuff done.
Yeah.
Right. Because if I didn't get it done, then I was going to have to stay late or get in early the next day.
Yeah.
So, you're not spending much time when you're so inwardly focused on helping employees become better. So the problem just keeps getting worse and worse. The more the less you train other people, the more business that you get, the more it depends on you.
Yeah.
It's a vicious cycle.
Yeah.
So I think, one of the challenges is, all right, I want to create this new sort of brand, this new image of my firm that says that, we're really tech savvy and we collaborate in real time on everything.
Yeah.
But, sometimes you have employees that are not very tech savvy. Who don't want to portray the brand as you want to portray.
Yeah.
And, up until this point, because you're not focused so much on them. Well, now you've got this new business model that you're wanting to advocate. And so there's this whole training and this whole culture that needs to evolve. You have to spend time with your staff really training them on this new model and why you want to do this and how is it going to positively impact their lives.
Yeah, and I'm assuming that part of that training helps to get them on board, but there were also people that maybe were not even the right fit. So I think you mentioned something about changing those people, removing them from the team, and getting people who were right for the team based on the new product and the way you want to deliver it.
Yeah, another great book is Jim Collins' Good to Great. And he says you have to get the right people on the bus in the right seats, right?
Yeah.
So that's really, really important. But I think one of the biggest challenges that small business owners have, Owen, is they've never taken the time to figure out what they want out of their business. They've never created a vision for their business. I think I mentioned to you when we talked before in the pre-interview that, you know, we do a lot of research around small business envisioning.
Yeah.
And what we find is that 95% of accounting firms have not ever taken the time to even figure out what vision that they have for their firm. Okay, so if you think about that, if the owner has no idea exactly where their firm's going to go, how challenging is that for their team to get on board with? Do you know what I mean?
They don't have the roadmap because the roadmap is not even in the mind of the owner.
Yeah, so that principle that and so as you hire people, you you know, if you don't show them the roadmap, you know, with a lack of a roadmap, they're going to meander wherever they want to meander. You know, which just creates frustration in you because they're not getting it, but you've never told them what it is. You know what I mean? Yeah,
I totally understand. And I think the second biggest challenge you mentioned during the pre-interview was the issue of existing clients moving into this new model. I want to talk about how you solved that problem.
Yeah, that's as we talked earlier, you know, if you were starting from scratch, it'd be easy, but that's not the case, right?
Yeah.
But what I had to do was I actually, you know, I used Microsoft Excel and I made a list of all of our customers, right? And I broke them out into broad categories based on the service offerings that we were going to be offering, right?
Yeah.
And I said, okay, I'm going to take an inventory of where all my clients currently are in the business processes today. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and then I'm going to go over here on the right side of this spreadsheet, and I'm going to put my ideal system, you know, across, you know, in headers across the top. I want them to be in a collaborative accounting system, you know, whatever that might be, right? I'm going to articulate my new model. So when I finished that spreadsheet, I had a picture of where I was, and I had a picture of where I wanted my clients to be.
Yeah.
And what I had to do was take them one at a time. I had to train my staff on what my new system was.
Yeah.
And then I had to give my staff members the authority, the power, I guess, to help me convert them one at a time into my new model. And to be quite honest, you know, given the client base that we had at the time, it took us about 3 years.
Wow.
What I found in this conversion process, Owen, was that the first thing I could do is never take on another client that didn't fit my model.
That didn't fit, yeah.
Right? That's the low-hanging fruit. Mm-hmm. And then there's also the low-hanging fruit inside of your practice, which I would estimate at about a third, that would do whatever I asked them to do.
Yeah.
Right? And then you had this other third that was kind of, well, show me how this benefits
me. Why I should do this, yeah, yeah.
And they'll eventually go. And then you had this last third that, you know, they were not a good fit for our business.
At all.
At the end of the day, they just weren't a good fit. And so you have to make those tough decisions in our case, to not do work for them anymore. If they didn't want to fit our system, then we weren't going to do work for them anymore.
I totally understand that. And I think you also mentioned then, too, as part of the model was that you want to empower more of your employees, and the client wouldn't have access to you as much because you were empowering the employees to replace you.
You know, one of the things I like to tell the firms that we work with is one of the best decisions I ever made was to never go into a meeting by myself.
Wow.
And because whenever you go into a meeting by yourself with a client, there's an expectation that gets set that I'm going to do the work. Right?
Yeah.
And so when I made this decision to never go into a meeting by myself, and I learned this from somebody along the way. What I did at every meeting, every time I took on a new client, I took one of my staff members in, and I set the expectation when we left that meeting that staff person would follow up with them.
Yeah.
And if they needed something else, to let me know.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden, you know, I'm creating this business that people don't call me anymore. They're calling that staff person or this other staff person. And all of a sudden, I'm seeing some freedom.
Yeah.
And that's kind of intoxicating. You want more of that, right? You want to gain more and more freedom. And it takes time. But, you know, one of the ways you do it is to set the right expectations up front.
I like that. And so I'm wondering, we've talked about the two challenges, but I'm wondering, were there other challenges that we've not talked about that come to mind that you want to talk about?
Oh, there's so many challenges on along the way, but I think probably one of the biggest ones is having having this mission statement that, that says, this is what I want to be, this is the kind of clients I want to serve, and this is how I want to serve them, and having the ability to say no.
The chutzpah.
When somebody, or the chutzpah, right? When somebody comes along that's not a good fit, because it's really easy to say, wow, that client
with all the money
could pay me a bunch of money.
Yeah.
And next thing you know, everything breaks down. Your employees realize that you weren't serious about this whole thing. And it's
in the first place. Yeah. I see that because, you know, having the system and the model, and now somebody comes who doesn't fit that model and you accept them because of the money, right? It's good short term, but long term, that also tells your employees that this new system you want us to follow, you're not even serious enough to even play this game with us. So why should we take it seriously?
Yep.
I get that. Yeah. And so given all these challenges that happened that you mentioned earlier, why did you even stay committed to the goal of systematizing and automating your business?
Well, you know, it's what I did. You know, you have a wife and you have kids, and you know, it's not like you can just kind of chuck it all and go somewhere else. And certainly staying in the model that I was in was not an acceptable thing to me.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think the process of systematizing was what I would call a short-term pain for a long-term gain.
Yeah.
You know, you just got to buckle down and you know, if you create a system and you teach somebody else how to operate that system, boy, there's power in that. There's leverage in that, and that's just really, really powerful.
And moving forward in the story, so at what point in time did you feel that, you know, the entire company was systematized and it could actually run without you successfully?
You know, probably about 10 years ago. And so, you know, at that point, I'm about 40 years old at that time, right? And all of a sudden, you know, I get some opportunities to write a book with Michael Gerber. So he and I end up co-authoring one together called The E-Myth Accountant. And from that, you know, I wrote another book called The Intentional Accountant, but I'm getting all these speaking opportunities around the country and around the world. So all of a sudden, I'm not going to be in my office, right?
Yeah.
And when I really realized it was when we kept growing and things kept going and we kept making more and more money and I wasn't in the middle of it. That's when all of a sudden you have this awful.
You hit home, like, you're not in the office doing something. Yeah.
Right. It's still happening without me.
That's awesome. And so now that we're more in current times now, one of the things we always like to do in this interview is talk about, you know, go behind the scenes and give the listener kind of a behind the scenes of how the business is currently working. So I'm just going to use this analogy of like a conveyor belt. So I want to learn the different parts of your business and the specific systems that you have in each of them. So imagine your business like a conveyor belt. On one end is a service-based business, like you mentioned earlier, they probably need, you know, help with their finances and they meet your model, right? And then the other end is that same person. They've gone through your service, you've delivered the product to them, and they're loving you guys and raving and referring you guys customer. But behind the scenes, that whole transformation is happening as a result of systems you have inside of the company. So feel free to start from even the marketing or customer acquisition part, but I just want to go through the different sections of
You know, for us, everything starts with our image here locally. So we're known in our local community, and I'm in Bloomington, Indiana. We're known as being a tech-savvy accounting firm that services service-based businesses.
Yeah.
Our website is certainly puts that out there, as well as all the marketing material that we have. So, you know, based on what I learned a number of years ago, which was, you know, who I wanted to serve, what I wanted to do for them and how I wanted to do it, I now go sort of fishing for that kind of client. So everything we do says, this is the kind of client that I want to attract.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important. So once we start attracting that client, then we have a very defined process that says, okay, when you make an appointment online or you call in or you stop by to start new, you know, to essentially interview us as your CPA firm, then we have a process that says this is how we welcome them. This is how we show them about our onboarding process. That's very defined for us. And we clearly articulate essentially the way the whole system works to that client. And we, before we finish that first meeting, we get buy-in that this client wants to operate inside of the system.
Yeah.
And then we have systems then that onboard that client all the way through and puts them into a recurring revenue model, so that we get the same consistent outputs on the backside. And it also, you know, evens out our cash flow. We don't bill by the hour, so we bill by the product that we deliver.
That they get in, yeah.
Yeah. So we have defined systems from the fishing for the right kind of clients, mm-hmm. to bringing them into the firm, to the processes that in all the softwares that we use to service that client, to the way we deliver a product on the back end.
Yeah.
And that's hard to do in a service-based business. I mean, because, you know, you're really... People think they're buying services, but
they're,
you know,
buying
really
a product.
We,
yeah.
All right. We've productized them.
I like that. And so, you know, what systems do you now have in place that enable all your employees to know what they need to do? And I love the way you answered it during the pre-interview, is that you tie it all back to who is your ideal
client. We have this. So we have a 7-step process that we help firms think through, Owen. And we use this process internally ourselves. And we call it the entrepreneurial thinking model. And it starts with identifying the future you want. It's that vision piece. It's understanding, okay, as a practitioner, what kind of future do I really want? Do I want a business that supports the life I want to live? Or do I want a life that supports my business, right?
Yeah.
So we articulate the future we want. After we've done that, the next step is to create a business model, the model in which you're going to serve. And once you've created that model, then you can start leading. So leadership is the third component, leading your team down the path and leading your clients down the path that you've created this vision. You have this model. You start leading towards that end. After that, you build a brand that attracts the right kind of clients, which we like to call those, which is the fifth step, is the ideal client.
Yeah.
Which leads you to the sixth step, which is an ideal day, which is the way that you want to spend your day.
Yeah.
And then that's all wrapped around, we wrap around that this concept of refinement, because nothing is ever really quite done. It's constantly being
constant
refined.
Improvement, yes.
Yeah. Does that make sense?
I like that, because if your employees know exactly that ideal customer and all the ideal client and all the parameters around them, it makes them know that, okay, it's kind of like a guideline, not necessarily tell them specifically step by step what to do, but it gives them a framework within which to be in whenever they're engaging with the customer as the customer goes through the different stages of the process that you've built.
You know, Owen, we have a 10-step checklist on one page, right?
Yeah.
That defines the ideal client for us. So when somebody calls up or, again, books an appointment or whatever, you know, however we get that initial lead,
yeah,
we go through that 10-step process to identify, is this the right kind of client for us? And, you know, you have to get 8 out of 10 of those for us to take you on.
Can we make this more concrete for the listener? Are you comfortable sharing that 10-step with us?
Yeah, if I could. I don't have it pulled up in front of me right now.
Oh, we can wait. We can wait.
Oh, let me pull this. Let me find this real quick.
Awesome, man. You guys are about to get some knowledge bombs, so be excited. I'm excited.
All right, you gotta fill just a touch of time while I open this up, Owen.
It's all right. I mean, if they've been listening all the way to this point, they're eager to hear. Like
they're in, right? All right. This is actually in a presentation that I'm giving on Tuesday. Obstacles. I have way too many slides in this next PowerPoint that I have to. Here we go. Okay.
Awesome.
So we call it our ideal client rating criteria. And so if you break this down into, if somebody has an existing business on, what I recommend is that you go back and you rate those, your existing clients into what we commonly referred to as A, B, C, and D clients, right?
Yeah.
So an A client gets 8 out of 10 of these attributes. A B client gets 6 out of 7.
Yeah.
C gets 4 out of 4 or 5, and a D gets 3 or fewer. All right. So if we drop down and look at what these are, the first one is integrity. You know, client has high integrity and doesn't pressure us to compromise our standards.
Yeah.
You know, we don't want somebody that's wanting to cheat. Values our advice is our second one. Allows us to be a trusted advisor, seeks and acts on the advice that we give them. The third one is fees and payment. I mean, they pay us on time.
Yeah.
And we don't have these big arguments over fees. Fourth one is they buy multiple services from us.
Yeah.
The fifth one is they're cooperative in dealing with my team. The sixth one is their accounting records are clean, right? They're not just a mess. Seventh one is influence. I mean, how much can they influence other customers, ideal customers, to come to us?
Yeah.
The eighth one, you know, we do track the amount of billings that we can generate out of this client. And the ninth one's being respectful. And the last one is buying our core service offerings.
Yeah.
Right? So those aren't necessarily in importance order. They're the 10 criteria. So you got to be buying our products. You got to be respectful. We have high billings, have influence, keep good books and records, you know, values, buy multiple services from us, and have high integrity and be cooperative.
And I love that because it might not tell them explicitly what to do, but it just gives them your employees a framework within which to act upon. And it's clear on what that framework is. It tells them who the ideal customer is. And it's easy to just quickly identify if that person is not even the right fit based on this framework or guideline that they're working within. And we talked about, you were talking about results. So I guess let's even dive into this a little bit. How do you track and verify they're delivered by your employees? I think you mentioned you have a practice yep. management system in place.
Yeah, we have a practice management system where we track every bit of all the time that we spend on clients. We don't bill by time, but we track time.
Yeah. Why do
we bill a fixed fee amount.
Okay.
You know what the value of technology, Owen, is in an hourly billing model?
Yeah.
It's zero. You know, it's zero because as you become more efficient, yeah. the use of technology, your billings go down in an hourly model, right?
Yeah.
Because you should be able to do it faster.
Yeah.
So if you're not in a fixed fee environment, then there's no benefit to applying technology to yeah. the situation. But and yet we know everybody wants to utilize technology, so it's really counterproductive. But what keeps most firms from billing in a fixed fee environment is they have a perception that there's going to be risk to them because they don't know how much time something's going to take them.
That's true.
And the reason they don't know how much time it's going to take them is because they haven't built a model and they don't have the right client in the model.
Yeah.
You know, if I do a tax return for somebody, I know how long that tax return is going to take me. I shouldn't have to bill that client by the hour because they're going to fit our model. Do you see what I mean?
I totally understand. Yeah.
So we have this practice management system that we track our time, we bill in a fixed fee model. So it's, you know, we know what our realization is. We know what kind of services we make the most money on. We know which staff people we make the most money on. We know which clients we make the most money on.
So the necessarily you guys tracking your time is just so that you understand your capacity of what your employees can do.
It's capturing your cost. I mean, you know, you got to figure Apple knows exactly how much it costs them to produce a MacBook Pro.
Yeah.
Although they charge a fixed fee for it, they know how much that costs them.
Yeah.
To do that. So it's just counting our costs.
And you also mentioned that you also have a series of dashboards that shows what everybody needs to be doing across the office.
Yep.
And tracks results. Go ahead.
For every service, for every solution or every product that we deliver, we have a series of steps in delivering that product.
Yeah.
So you just think about a tax return as an example. You know, you receive it in, we scan it, we prepare it, we may review it, and then, you know, we monitor the electronic filing of that. So there's five steps in that process.
Yeah.
And five different people may be involved in that process at any point in time. So we use a series of dashboards that when step one is done, it triggers step two on a dashboard that says, hey, this return's been received in, it's time to scan it. When scanning's done, it, you know, you check, tells the next step, hey, this return's been scanned, it's ready to go. So it keeps our staff from having to go looking around for what's going on in the office. Everything's right in front of them on a dashboard.
Another thing that I think I love that you mentioned is about tracking the profit.
Well, I mean, that's important to us. I mean, we want to know, you know, if I don't know the kind of service that makes us the most money.
Yeah.
So let's say that in a tax return service, we make, let's say you get $300 on average an hour out of that service.
Yeah.
Versus a payroll service, let's say that you average maybe $50 an hour out of that service.
Yeah.
Which part of your business would you rather grow?
It's logical. I love the thinking of that. Yeah.
But if you don't know those things,
you don't
then know. You feel like I might as well just do everything. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. I totally understand. And you know, now that, you know, kind of, you know, we've established that the business runs without you and you have a lot more free time, I'm wondering which areas of the business you focus on more now and why?
Well, today, you know, I would say on 80% of my time is focused on strategy. The acquisition of the right client and improving our processes. So I don't do production work anymore. I focus on oiling the system, tweaking the system, making it better. I get a big kick out of that. I like doing that. And then feeding that system with the right kind of customers.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, that's awesome. And what's the next stage of growth for your business? And, you know, what do you plan to achieve next and why?
You know, at this point, I think we're continuing to expand outside the U.S. And, you know, there's still a lot of business to be had in the U.S. for us.
Yeah.
But I think the reason we're interested in outside the U.S. is because it gives energy to our company.
Yeah.
And, you know, we believe the day should be fun. And I like to travel internationally quite a bit.
Yeah.
So it's just fun to affect other cultures and really feel, really gain an understanding of how much other cultures are exactly like ours. You know, people are pretty similar when I was in the UK or in Paris doing, you know, training. It's kind of the same. It's the same people having the same problems.
I think one of the things I like during the pre-interview, you mentioned this analogy of a kid who's trying to sell door to door by himself. And one day, it was, I guess, selling cookies. And one day his mom comes with 100 orders. I think that was basically leveraging the other other people selling for you guys. That's kind of like the next stage of the business. Talk about that.
It is. I'm glad you brought that up. On, you know, I'd read this article that said that, you know, it was talking about this kid who had become an adult and became fabulously wealthy. But when asked what was one of the biggest learning experiences he had, he said that, you know, I think it was a box of Girl Scout cookies or something he was selling for his sister, right? And he was going door to door trying to sell one box at a time.
Yeah.
And what he found was when he gave the case to his mom and she took it to the office while he was at school, they sold out all the cookies. So he sold like 100 boxes of cookies.
Yeah.
And the learning for him was how valuable it is when you have a product that you can get other people, you know, outside of your organization even to recommend and sell for you, how much faster your business grows. So the next phase for us is to get other big players in the marketplace. We work a lot with a company called Intuit, which is the maker of QuickBooks.
Yeah.
You know, to advocate us as a service provider, because, you know, with their megaphone being so much bigger than ours and some other vendors in the space as well,
they're
helping us grow so much faster than we could ever grow one box of cookies at a time.
Yeah, I totally get that. I love that. And you know, as we come to the end of the interview, you know, I think I want you to do two things. First of all, is kind of give the listener kind of like a summary of what we've kind of talked about so far, so that they can get to run their business successfully without them having to be there, and then also give them like the very next step they should take to, you know, move towards that journey.
Okay. So if I go back and summarize, I'm going to go back to my entrepreneurial thinking model, Owen, and say, I think the very first step is to go off with a pencil and paper or your laptop and figure out what vision you have for your business. What is it that you want this business to be?
Yeah.
After you think about that, I think the next component of that is to figure out, okay, based on what you want, what am I going to sell?
Yeah.
You know, how am I going to sell it? How am I going to deliver it? And then lead your team to help you in this process. Create a brand that reflects what it is that you want, and then go find the right customers. Those are, I think, the main summary of everything that we've talked about. Let's figure out our future. Let's get the right business model in place. Let's systematize everything. Let's go get the right customers to feed this system.
And final question, I'm wondering, is there a question that you were wishing that I would have asked you during this interview that you feel that, you know, I didn't get to ask you yet? It doesn't have to be systemization or automation, but whatever you think would help to even round out the interview and make it even, as listeners about to end it, what you think that question would be, and pose the question and the answer as well.
You know, I think I always like to think of, you know, why, what's the value of why put all this effort into creating
in the first place, right?
You know, to creating a bigger business.
Yeah.
And you know, I think the value for me, Owen, is in providing a little work.
Yeah.
I think of myself more as the caretaker of our business. You know, and I've got all these people depending upon it, but I think of myself as a caretaker more than an owner.
Yeah.
You know, I'm trying to create this really nice, fun, aesthetically pleasing environment that serves our customers and also our team. And you know, Covey always had this mantra. You know, you live, love, learn, and lastly, leave a legacy.
Yeah.
So it's really fun to see other people can grow inside this organization, and you can sort of help them, you know, blossom as well. That's really the value for me.
Awesome. And what would you say is the best way for the listeners to connect with you and thank you for doing the interview?
You know, they can certainly reach out to me, shoot me an email. My email is droot@root.com. I don't mind giving that out, Owen. And then if you want to find out more about what we do, you can go to RootWorks, so ROOTWORKS.com. That's our accounting, or that's our consulting company's website. And then our accounting firm's website is root.com.
Awesome. And so now I'm speaking to you, the listener who has been listening all the way to this point. So obviously, I'm sure you liked the interview. And if you want to give us your feedback, please do leave us a positive review on iTunes. And to do that, go to sweetprocess.com/iTunes. It will redirect you to iTunes, and you can leave a positive review. And if you know another entrepreneur who will find this interview useful, please share with them. And one more thing, if you are at that stage in your business where you're tired of being the bottleneck and you want to get everything out of your head so your employees know what you know and can get work done the way you want it done, well, consider signing up for a free 14-day trial of Sweet Process. And Darren, thanks for doing the interview.
Owen, it was a great time. I love talking about this stuff.
And we're done.
Good deal.
Before you go, we want to leave you with a free gift. Get your free systemization checklist. Avoid wasting valuable time documenting procedures for the wrong tasks. Get it right the first time with the systemization checklist. Download the checklist by going to sweetprocess.com/checklist.